Do it.
Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, 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 and, oh, yeah. Get you, Sam. Messing up my intro. It's African American Empowerment Saturday, 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment. Just means your man, Marvin Rome, and the crew coming to you live. We got Brother Kevin Land in the house. We got democracy at its best. Now you, me, us, we, and so much more. George Willie, let your quantum. Stay tuned. You don't want a minute. And as always, it's better love time. There is no greater love or no better love than for self and kind. No greater love. Welcome to African American Empowerment Saturday. It is 365 days of African American empowerment for the African American people, the African American family, the African American community. You're probably asking yourself, why we got to have this show, Marvin? Because we're going to educate our people. Right, bringing knowledge to the table. Knowledge, you know, they say our people perish for lack of knowledge and lack of wisdom. So we thought it'd be best if we could educate ourselves. What's wrong with that? Taking time out on a good Saturday right here in Richmond. It's raining, so a good rainy Saturday to sit by whatever fireplace you have or whatever conditions that you find yourself in. You could be on the road right now. You know, we have our international community that listens to us as well. So we welcome you to the show as well. But we're talking about just empowerment, right? When you think about it, it's really human empowerment, but we know where the needs are. So to address the needs, we have to think about how we can improve ourselves. And I think when that happens, you improve the individual. And if you improve an individual, then you can improve a family. And if you improve a family, then you can improve a community. And it's all about community engagement and community development, particularly for our community, which has this history, a storied history of marginalization, right, of disrespect and of enslavement. And you could just go down the list of all the atrocities that our people, people of color, Negroes, African-American, colored, you want to name it, is there, right? Our people have gone through a lot. And so in this restorative or this resurrection phase, we're just wanting to educate our people, right, to get better, to have better families and better households and better parents and better communities, right, as we continue to work on ourselves. And no one's perfect. Let me be perfectly clear on that. None of us are perfect, but we can strive to be the best human beings that we can be each day, one day at a time. And that's the whole goal, is to better yourselves, right? Better our communities and find places in which we can grow and then do that. But along the path, it is educating ourselves on what we can do for ourselves to make lives and our lives better. So we came up with the peace concept. And there are five peace concepts, but you get one today. And it is the comprehensive agenda, right? Looking at the processes that we can utilize to execute a strategy to help our communities grow. One, we need a political agenda, so I'm spelling peace, right? That political agenda helps to educate us on the systems, right? The political system and how it works, right? So we sit down and we educate our young people and our families and our communities on a political agenda. Learning, for example, what to say and do when you get pulled over by the police, right? And that is an education that you get, right? So I'm going to email all the way down the line. Because if you get pulled over and you say the wrong things, then what you say can be held against you in the court of law. And if you're found guilty, then you could be charged, right? You could have a fine, or you could go to jail with a felony or misdemeanor, whatever that is. But if we understand how to navigate the system, then we can create strategies that we can manipulate and move around the system so that those things can not impact us as greatly. So understanding the law and how it works, for example, will be under the political agenda. Understanding the judicial system and how it works is under the political arm of the NAAEA, and understanding policing and how it works and how we can navigate these systems, right? Then we move over to the E
right? The first E, and there's economics, and they're all tied together. And, you know, these systems all work together anyway. It's just now developing strategies ourselves in which we then promote these tactics and these strategies and these tools to help us better persist, right, to stay out of harm's way, for example, right, and understanding how that making bad choices could be detrimental economically, right, and understanding capitalism, how money works, money management, understanding the dollar, all these things are so vitally important to making sure that we do the things that we need to do. I'm moving on now to the A. That's you. It's a personal thing now where you begin to get your A together. It's athletics, but it's health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition. It's not like being on a track team or a basketball team, but really your personal health and wellness, mental health, physical health, emotional health. How do you take care of your body and your mind, right? Doing those things that's going to bring you peace and relaxation and tranquility to get the stress off of the temple, so to speak. Now let's move over to see relevant cultural programs that really make us feel good about ourselves. As we continue to teach and educate and train our young people, we can then teach them to have their chin up and chest out, feeling proud of who they are and about their history and their culture, right, and those generations that they stand on. And lastly is E, is the comprehensive education that really looks at how we can get better at learning and growing. And there's nothing wrong with that. As we continue to strive for excellence each day, every day, one day at a time, learn more about the NAA. Go out to www.naaea.info and become a member. Yeah, we need your membership. We do, right? More members we got, the more we get support from you, the more we can move forward with creating a national agenda that really looks at how we can help our people and ourselves. And now, without fail, is the Stan Macklin moment. We'll be right back.
Man, Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, man, we got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
Brothers and sisters, just imagine for a moment about what Brother Stan said. The pillars of the NAAEA help us to stop trying to get in and fit in and create our own. So imagine if now that our young people who are graduating from college, who graduated from high school, or even our adults, that we can create jobs and opportunity for them in the communities that we live in, right, that they can create, develop, and have a living wage, right, where they can earn, right, from a business that they created or that they're supporting or they're in entrepreneurship with. That is the idea, right, that we can create economics and sustain ourselves and our communities, right? We can eradicate poverty quickly if we learn to work together, and we're going to have to do that one day at a time. And now, coming up on my favorite segment of the show, I always say it every week because it's true, it's the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment with my brother George. You got to bring him in, right, y'all? Come on. Rock with me now. Thank you for joining us today. Oh, yeah.
Bring it! What?
George, we ain't going nowhere. Right here. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing fine, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing great today. Great, great job. I'm looking good. I'm feeling good. And I'm looking forward to the Willie Lynch Kwanzaa segment. What you got for us, brother?
Well, today's Kwanzaa principle is Nia, which means purpose. To make as our collective vocation the building and developing of our community in order to restore our people to their traditional greatness. Now, Nia, purpose, the act of being responsible demonstrates that a person is committed to a certain standard of behavior. Through a commitment to an idea, to a goal, to a positive, ongoing relationship with someone or something, we find our purpose in life and begin to fulfill our human potential. Nia. And I think that's really a characteristic that we can focus in on well. The Willie List segment. I think I chose an interesting book to quote from. And the name of the book is What They Never Told You in History Class by Indus Kemet Kush. And what he does, what I want to do before I start quoting things out of the book, which I'll do as we go along, you know, in different shows. He wanted to explain why he thinks he needed to write a book like this in the first place, which leads to a very unsettling question for them. Let me see. Let me go back a little further. White supremacy must be upheld at all costs. It is like asking an American Nazi to accept the fact that Hitler had Jewish roots. If he had them, it would simply be too hard for a Nazi to imagine, given the fact that they have been programmed to the complete opposite direction. So too with the white supremacists in America and throughout the world, which leads to an unsettling question for them. What is the white childhood of Europe, Greece, doing in the black cradle, which is Egypt? Without this particular primacy, the very foundation of white supremacy cannot stand. In other words, without the premises of black culture, of the black educational and the black cradle of creativity, white supremacy could not stand because it has no foundation without our foundation. That's what Dr. Clark was saying. Dr. Clark has often said that the Europeans monopolize information. One might also include the very perception of reality itself. Thus, civilization was started by the white man in the person of Greeks and Romans. And of course, they should also be credited with creating the one and only true religion from the white Judeo-Christian tradition. This is but another manifestation of white supremacy. Given their twisted perception of reality, it should come as no surprise that God is white too. Superior intellect and spiritual enlightenment of white Europe, that civilization and religion could be achieved for the rest of the non-white world. Therefore, the innate inferiority of black people is self-evident, having been completely absent in any elevation of man from barbarism to civilization. This stereotype has far-reaching consequences, a fact that has been clearly illustrated in a Newsweek article entitled, You Can't High Jump If the Bar is Set Low, by Connie Leslie. It reported on a scientific experiment done by Claude Steele, a professor of social psychology at Stanford University, who demonstrated that some blacks suffer from stereotype vulnerability, which in simple terms means that if you, by word or by deed, tell kids they're part of a group that can't succeed, they won't. Over time, Steele told Newsweek the pressure from stereotype vulnerability can push black children to stop identifying with achievement in school. Steele argues that when black or any other group are confronted with stereotype about their intellectual skills before they take tests, they tend to perform according to the stereotype. Change the expectations, however, and Steele finds that blacks score as high as white students taking the same test. Now, the point that was made there was that Dr. Clark was saying that white supremacy has dominated information. They control information, so their information tells you that the Greeks and the Romans were the ones who brought about civilization. That's not true. It was mainly the Egyptian or Kemetic civilization that taught them, which was black civilization, but they put it in reverse. But because they control the books, they control the process of information, they can tell you anything that they want to. And when our children who don't know, and many of our adults don't know, then they can tell your children anything. And our children will perform based on, this is what the brother Steele did this test. Based on the test that he did, he proved that if I teach a child that they're dumb, that they don't know anything, and their people don't know anything, they're going to act like that. But if I teach them that their children, that their people are great, accomplished people, they will also act like that. So that's the role that I think that we should play. And that's why I always say that we should flood our young people with the positive accomplishments of our people. Because if we do that, they will act on that. And they will solve future problems for us as people. So, Brother Marvin, I know I took a little long, you know, but I appreciate it. And if you got something for me, let me have it.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. Not too long, but very strong. I like it. Keep it going, brother. Keep it going. Here is the empowerment question of the week. Y'all ready? Being purpose. How do we as a community, black folk, black people, begin the practice and the process of building and restoring standard of behavior? How do we as black people, black folk, begin the process getting back a purpose, and that is of building and restoring a standard of behavior? Go for it, brother.
Well, my answer to that is that in a situation like that, you have to lead by example. And that's one of the things that I think that in the past, many of us in our culture have fallen short. Because we use a term that I think is not really a legitimate term which we use. Do as I say do, not as I do. But that's not the way human beings function. Human beings function that they do what they see. And so they're going to do what you do. Because they think that if I respect you, whatever it is that you're doing must be right. So we have to learn to reverse our behavior and begin to become an example for our young people to behave like. The way we dress, the way we eat, the way we act, the way we treat our women, the way we treat our men. We have to begin to act on the behaviors that we want our young people to adapt. We have to start doing those things ourselves. And we also can have classes we can have classes on mannerisms, you know, which is ways to behave. Just like many of us were taught, when you talk to an older adult, you say, yes, sir. You say, yes, ma'am. And so that stuck with you, and you still do it for the rest of your life because we were taught those as mannerisms, please and thank you. So, Brother Marvin, that's my response, and I hope it answered your question.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate that. Great response. Ain't nothing wrong. Yeah, that's right. I said ain't. Ain't nothing wrong with some good old-fashioned manners. There is nothing wrong with being courteous. Nothing wrong with being kind. Absolutely nothing wrong with being respectful. Those things matter. How we speak to our children. I see them in the store all the time cussing their children out. What do you think is going to happen when these kids go to school? You think the teachers are going to get that and the administrators are going to get that? They're going to get what you give them at home. So what's wrong with going back to the old standard and the old way of home training? That's where you get it at. We're expecting the school system and social services to train and develop and teach and educate our children when it really should happen at home. And I think you're right, Brother George, before I end on this one. We have to start having programs and activities, community-based activities that really help us to look at how we can start reframing the way that we think. Courses on how to behave, mannerisms, how men should be men and how we should treat our women and how women should treat their men and their sons and their boys and their daughters, right? But that training has to happen. And again, lastly, how we continue to flood our young people with positive information that really help us look at how we're going to do what it is that we need to do to become the best people that we can be once again on the face of this earth. All right, that's it for today with that. Thank you, Brother George. I appreciate you, and I'll have you on standby as we go into the show today with Brother Kebulin. Today, why the framers of the U.S. Constitution opposed democracy. Got a great one coming up in just a minute. 845-277-9250 is the call-in number. And if you want to hit us up on Slido, it's in effect today. This week, the number is 365-0103. Once again, Slido is in effect, 365-0103. Go out there. Let us know what you think, right? The show is all about African-American empowerment. We can't do it without you. So if you don't participate, then how can we educate? We got to know that we're going in the right direction, right? All right, here we go. Kevin is coming up. He's ready. He's on board. He's on deck. Thank you all for listening. We got a great response this week from our international community. They're listening around the world. So thank you for listening. If you're joining us in other countries, we appreciate your support. Keep listening, spreading the word of empowerment. All right, here we go. It's time now. We got to bring Brother Kebulin in, right? Knowledge is power. Peace and blessings. Brother Kebulin, here we go.
Bring it! What?
Right here.
Gambia, we see you. Brother Kebulin.
Yeah, hotel brother, how you doing?
Hotep, my brother. I'm doing good, man. I'm excited about what we got up.
What's the Slido? You gave me the number, but what's the Slido link?
The Slido website. Is Slido.com. SLIDO.com.
SLIDO.com. I did it instead.
Mm-hmm.
It says, let me see. I did it instead. The content. Dangerous site. I don't know what's going on.
What?
Might
be. It just might be, brother, but I doubt if it's dangerous. Knowledge is dangerous.
Right.
Sometimes it's in the wrong hands, right? Electricity can be bad when it's in the wrong.
No.
It's running loose,
maybe
just like fire can.
Is it www first? Maybe I can hit www dot something like that. I am worried about that.
Yeah, quick.
All right.
It is.
First of all, I want to say good evening to everyone, and thank you to those who came to hear me speak at the main library. It's the first time I've spoken a long time since due to COVID. And I like speaking public more so than Zoom. I just like being with the people. All right, so today my presentation is titled, Why the Framers of the United States Constitution Opposed Democracy. Why the Framers of the United States Constitution Opposed Democracy. And so often we talk about economics independent of politics. However, they are joined at the hip. I asked Dr. John Henry Clark, peace be unto him, what should we establish first, our economic program or our political program? He said you do them simultaneously. He gave examples such as Chinatown, the Italian community, and the Jewish community. You don't go into their communities like they did in Tulsa, and there'll not be dire consequences. Clark wasn't talking about picking up guns. ADL, for example. You don't hear them picking, you don't hear about them picking up guns. But they got the economic program together. It carries on into their political program. Kanye West, Yeezy, tweeted, I'm a bit sleepy tonight, but when I wake up, I'm going to go DEFCON 3 on a certain group of people. His remarks were deemed anti-Semitic. The first thing that came to my mind is this brother got a lot of money, but evidently he doesn't understand politics. And West later wrote, I lost $2 billion in a day. $2 billion in a day. And I've been following him and his wife, Kardashian, and one time she had only like $28 million to his billion. His wife, Kim Kardashian's net worth was reported at $28 million in 2014, $250 million in 2018, and today, without receiving alimony payments, she has passed her former husband at $1.7 billion as of October 2023. And Kanye has reported a net worth of $400 million. I knew freedom of speech was free, but $200 million in a day? You got to understand the connection between economics and politics. For those who say we never had an economic program together, that's a slap in the face to our ancestors, because in Tulsa, Oklahoma, they had an economic program together. In Richmond, Virginia, they had their economic program together. North Carolina, they had their economic program together. Some parts of Florida. But whether they had a political agenda together, that's why we're here today, because you got to connect it to your politics and your economics. So I'm going to go over the history. And to get you to understand the mindset of the framers, I won't say founding fathers, I said the framers of the United States Constitution. In the past, I tried to cover seven aspects of people's culture. Those areas are history, religion, political organization, economic organization, social organization, creativity, which is the arts, music, dance, drama, literature, and I've covered psychology. And there's also subcultures that Neely Philly discusses in his book, like walls and sex and things like that. But all those things can fall under those aspects that I gave you just now: history, religion, politics, economics, social order, creativity, and psychology. Today I will discuss politics. I'm not that well versed in politics. We need to be versed in all aspects of people's culture. That doesn't mean we know it all. But I do know more than a whole lot of people. I will share with you today what I do know, and I will cut off and look to you to fill in where I left off, because I'm sure there are some people on this call that are politically astute. Why the framers of the United States Constitution oppose democracy? The framers of the Constitution did not want democracy for the people. Neither do I. Let's start with why I oppose democracy. Democracy is a rule by the majority. I'm not saying democracy is not a noble idea. Over here, we're born unequal, and those in power don't mean to make things equal. A sister sent me a video a few days ago on Japanese culture. In that video, it said children in Japan don't take exams until grade 4 because there are more important lessons to learn in life than tests. They are taught to respect all people regardless of their financial situation. Children are taught independence while simultaneously working as a team. If there are no challenges in the school, children share responsibilities and take full charge in cleaning. They show little children about 6 or 7 years old with a mop in their hand, washing the bathroom and cleaning the bathroom out. So they'll know that they're not above a challenge or above someone else in the community because of their financial status. They learn the value and importance of conserving the environment. Education is for learning and not grades. Kwanzaa Kujufu said that. We go to school, it should be about what our child learns, not grades. Because if you make it about grades, they could cheat to get an A. They could cheat to get a B. But ask them what they learn. It says lower and middle grades don't get grades in school. Politeness and punctuality is emphasized. As a result, children are interested in their learning. And the attendance rate is nearly 100%. Now, we don't have a system like that over here. And when you look at the United States compared to other nations in the world, we're always close to the bottom as far as education is concerned. I oppose democracy, and I will get into why the framers oppose, but I oppose democracy because democracy being a rule of, and this is my personal opinion, because I said I oppose it. I oppose democracy because democracy being a rule of majority, my voice will be stifled and unheard and unheard. I represent the majority in thought among African people. Evidence of this was on February 24, 2024, Brother Shaquille gave a powerful message at the main library on Franklin, and I told him so. The house should have been packed. But because his views, along with the views of the speakers on this program, represent minority, the people weren't there. The program was free to the people. Had the speaker been Al Sharpton, Roland Martin, or Tavis Smiley, and the cost was $100 a ticket, the people would have been there. Even though those speakers couldn't touch the information that Brother Akil was bringing to the table, the people would go see Usher at $135 a seat rather than see a brother dropping knowledge for free. The people tend to be emotional, uninformed, and misinformed in their responses. And we learned from Carl G. Woodson that we are miseducated. And not only did they miseducate us, they miseducated whites as well. Because in order for the scheme to work, they had to miseducate their own. My elder, now an ancestor, Carly would say, check out those old cowboy moves. The crowd was always wrong. In the old West, horse stealing was a serious crime because left out in the wild on foot could be life-threatening. So often, not the law, but vigilantes took charge and hanged horse thieves. The crowd would string a guy up. There was always one who stood alone, like Brother Booker always said. And the lone one said, the sheriff has a telegraph coming in about the horse thief. Perhaps this guy's telling the truth, and we got the wrong guy. Let's wait on the sheriff. But the crowd yells, he's the right one, all right. Let's string him up, boys. The sheriff telegram comes in, and he reads, I caught the guy who stole the horse. He was riding on it coming into Dodge City, but it was too late. The crowd hung an innocent man. But the crowd's decision tends to be mass emotional decision. In the Tulsa Race Massacre, Dick Rowland, a black shoe shiner, supposedly stepped on the foot of a white elevator operator, Sarah Page, and she screamed. Without gathering all the facts, the crowd, a white mob, gathered outside the Tulsa County Courthouse, demanding the authorities hand over Dick Rowland. So when it comes to pardons, we tend to be emotional, uninformed, and misinformed. Had this been another nation where everyone was born equal, then I would say yes, democracy is noble. But over here, one word. How did Obama fail on foreign policy? We don't know. Why do blacks support Kamala Harris? Well, she's a woman. She's African American. She's Asian. She's Indian. If that's how you're voting, no. I don't want democracy, a majority rule. Now, let's go to the framers of the Constitution and their reason why they didn't want democracy. The framers of the United States Constitution didn't want democracy for the people because they, too, felt the people would make mass emotional decisions, like I mentioned, and their decisions would be uninformed and misinformed. Or misinformed. The reason, the difference between my explanation and the reason the framers' explanation is, the reason people are misinformed and uninformed is due to propaganda. And the goal is to keep them misinformed. There was never a goal to educate the masses, politically, economically, otherwise. If so, college tuition would not keep soaring. Having the masses educated was never the goal. The framers didn't want democracy for the people. I didn't say they didn't want democracy. I said they didn't want democracy for the people. Sure, they wanted it for themselves, for the people. In today's time, as back then, there is a democracy among the rich. When democracy is discussed, and we pick up these words, democracy, as if when people are saying it, they're thinking about us. In today's time, as back then, there's democracy among the rich. When democracy is discussed, the meeting is not between the have and the have-nots. You're not invited to the meeting. The meeting is between the have and the haves. Bill Gates, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, Warren Buffett, Rupert Murdoch, and many others. Their democracy is ruled by the minority, not the majority. The framers, as I mentioned, thought the people would be too emotional, uninformed, and misinformed. Although true, their explanation was a pretext for the real reason they opposed democracy. They opposed it because they were the minority. And if the majority ruled, their voices would be stifled and they could possibly be overthrown. Evidence of this was the Shea Rebellion, which took place August 29, 1786 to February 1787. This was about three years before the expected date of the United States Constitution, March 4, 1789. Let me repeat. Shea Rebellion, August 29, 1786. The Constitution expected date was March 4, 1789, years later. I'm going to read this article from the American Battlefield Trust. I'm going to read it in its entirety so you know exactly what happened in Shades Rebellion. Before I get started, just imagine you fighting in the Revolutionary War. Imagine you fighting any war, Iraq, Vietnam, any war. And you come back home, and you're about to lose your house. You're not fully compensated for the time you spent in the war. Your medical bill's not taken care of. There will be some frustration. So that's the background, what's going on here. For American Battlefield Trust, this is the roots of the Shades Rebellion. The roots of Shades Rebellion lay in the document which created the first government of the United States, the Articles of Confederation. Under Articles, the federal government had extremely limited power. This made sense to its drafters, who were at that moment fighting a war to separate themselves from a powerful central government in London that they thought was tyrannical. Under the Articles of Confederation, the federal government could not impose taxes on the people directly. It could only request money from the state government, which held the power to tax their citizens. Each state was also responsible for paying its own portion of the massive debt that had been accumulated to fund the war against Great Britain. So now imagine these states, you fight the Revolutionary War, but your state is responsible for the massive debt that had been accumulated to fund the war effort against Great Britain. To pay its creditors, merchants in Massachusetts convinced their state government, to raise taxes, Among the hardest hit by these new high taxes were farmers in the western part of the state. These farmers had little hard currency on hand and often relied on bottom and credit to obtain goods and services. In addition, many of these farmers were veterans of the Revolutionary War. Throughout the war, these veterans received less than their full amount of earned pay for their service throughout the war. These veterans received less than their full amount, sometimes receiving no payment at all. Pensions were only provided to men who had been disabled by wounds and to the widows of soldiers who had been killed. So now, it wasn't just enough for you to be fighting in the war. If you weren't wounded or someone died, you were not fully compensated. But farmers could not afford to pay their taxes or debt. Their farms were seized through foreclosures. Let me repeat that now. These are former vets. Well, farmers could not afford to pay their taxes or debt. Their farms were seized through foreclosures. Some who were unable to pay were sent to debtors' prisons. Revolutionary War veterans like Captain Daniel Shea felt abandoned and betrayed by his government, which had failed to pay them during the war and now crushed their livelihood. When the Massachusetts state government adjourned in August 1786 without considering petition for relief, that means they adjourned without even considering a petition for the relief for these veterans. When the Massachusetts state government adjourned in August 1786 without considering petitions for debt relief, a group of over 1,000 farmers marched on the town of Northampton and prevented the court from convening to conduct foreclosure proceedings. So the court is getting ready to foreclose on all these veterans' houses. And these veterans, 1,000 farmers, marched on the town and prevented the court from having foreclosure proceedings. The farmers called themselves regulators, referencing a similar rural uprising that occurred in North Carolina prior to the Revolution. Most famous for leading the rebellion, which bears his name, is Daniel Shea. Began his life as a son of Irish immigrants, Patrick and Margaret. Daniel Shays was one of the farmers who took part in the march on Northampton. The next month, he was one of the leaders of a group of armed farmers who successfully intimidated the court and Springwell into adjourning without hearing any foreclosure cases. He convinced the courts to adjourn without hearing any foreclosure case. It is about the foreclosure. As the news of these uprisings spread, listen to Kaplan, as the news of these uprisings spread through the nation, George Washington wrote nervously to one of his former aides, commotions of this sort, like snowballs, gather strength as they roll. Commotions of this sort, like snowballs, gather strength as they roll. So now, when the framers said they didn't want democracy because the people are informed and uninformed, true, they are, but that's a pretext behind the fact that they're about to be overthrown and the rich are the minority. After Shay's rebellion, afraid the people would overthrow the minority, which was them, capitalists sought a strong national government. This government was, and still today, is a republic. It keeps shooting the word democracy around, but it's a republic. They gave the people not power, but the illusion of power, but allowed them to vote for said representatives representing their interests. They used the term for this republic, a representative democracy. I don't use the term, because the people are to choose said representative from among themselves. However, every time we vote for someone put before us, we've never heard of them. At no time does the people say, include Bruce in the pool, include Marvin in the pool, include George in the pool. Don't you find it strange? The most, if not all, are millionaires and related. Even President Obama, supposed is related to George Bush, Harry Truman, and Dick Cheney. Don't you find it strange that the first black governor, the first black president, the first black vice president are all bi-racial, therefore having dual lawyers, you pose no threat. PSP Pinchback, the first black governor, his father was a white planter who owned his mother. Clarence Thomas, married to Miss Jenny. Kamala's husband, Doug Emhoff, E-M-H-O-F-F, is the first husband of the Vice President of the United States and the first Jewish spouse of the Vice President. There's a lot of firsts. You can't choose the family you're in, but don't you find it strange that they all had a white parent, white husband, or wife? I'm not putting down one's ancestry. Don't put words in my mouth. However, those in power are aware that due to your ancestry, due to you being multiracial, after politicking, you have to change back to Clark Kent because you have a spouse back home from the other side of the track. If you want to believe, they don't sit around and play these political games, then that's on you. But I just have a hard time believing that things just unfold in this manner. In a democracy, the majority elect representatives directly or indirectly to represent them. In a direct democracy, the people decide on policies without representation. The framers of the Constitution did not want this. the framers of the Constitution did not want this. They, because they were the minority. Like, I'm the minority in thought. They called for a republic as defined in the Constitution. Article 4, Section 4. The United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government, and I shall protect each of them against invasion and application of the legislator or of the executive, when the legislator cannot be convened against domestic violence. And they have coined this republic a representative democracy, where the people vote for said representative from amongst themselves. I don't use the term because the candidates we vote for do not come from amongst us. They come from the rich, through the monopolized parties, the Democrats and the Republicans, which are different sides of the same coin. The difference between Republicans and Democrats is the difference between a polar bear and a grizzly bear. The differences don't make a difference. You wouldn't want to dance for either one. Democrat Donald Trump, Democrat Ronald Reagan, Democrat Strom Thurmond, Democrat Jesse Holmes, and others became Republicans later. People can't see Donald Trump as being a Democrat first, or Ronald Reagan as being a Democrat first. They were Democrats. They became Republicans later. You are the one that seem to be stuck on a particular party. The rich operate like bookies. A bookie doesn't lose because they play both sides. In the Banana Gate of 1996, I'm not talking about the Banana Gate of 1970, but in the Banana Gate of 1996, Carl Lindner, spelled L-I-N-D-N-E-R, Carl Lindner, who headed the Chiquita Banana brand, wanted U.S. Trade Representative Nick Cantor to help him open European markets for his banana. So here's the Chiquita banana man. He has a hard time opening up the markets so he can get his banana into the European market. Nick Cantor, after the collapse of the Berlin Wall, American-owned banana companies, Dole, Chiquita, and Del Monte, who between them control nearly two-thirds of the world market, believe that they'll be able to increase sales enormously to Eastern Europe. They invested heavily to expand their plantations, principally in Latin America. Now, Carl Lindner, who is deceased now, at that time, was one of the wealthiest men in the world. I was looking at this video. President Clinton was sitting in the front row at a fundraising event. And there was a comedian on the stage. And comedians always make fun at the people on the front row. So President Bill Clinton was sitting on the front row at a fundraising event, and Carl Lindner was sitting next to him. The comedian on stage asked, "Who are you?" And Carl answered, "I'm Carl Lindner." I got that, but how do you get to sit next to the President of the United States on the front row with no security? Said the comedian. The answer, Lindner was a lifelong right-wing Republican. However, he financed Bill Clinton's election campaign. And because of Lindner's generosity, Bill Clinton invited him to sleep at the White House in a Lincoln's bedroom. But Carl did not discriminate. Everybody knew Carl. Everybody in the circle knew Carl. Carl did not discriminate. Democrat candidate Bill Clinton was running against Republican candidate Bob Dole. Carl Lindner supplied Dole with his own corporate jet to help the politician through his travels for a 1996 presidential election against Bill Clinton. So Lindner was financing Clinton, and he was financing Dole. Bob Lowe was in Lindner's pocket. So was Republican Newt Gingrich, Republican Trent Lott, House Democrat leader John Gephardt, and Democrat John Glenn. All was in Carl Lindner's pocket. Again, I don't use the term representative democracy because the wealthy are representing us independent of our wishes. What I would call a representative democracy is, before you vote on something, consult with me first to see if I approve of the way you're going with this. But they don't do that. Again, I don't use the term representative democracy because the wealthy are representing us independent of our interests. They don't consult us first to see if we approve of their vote. They said, we're doing these things in the interest of national security. The people don't mind. Did you ask us? No. They know we won't agree. They don't ask us. Amendments have been ratified by 3-4 states. Now these amendments are becoming interpretations because they can't take a chance of us not ratifying something that's nefarious. So they interpret. Another way of stopping the majority rule was a lot of white men without property couldn't vote. Black, and I'm going to explain to you later why they decided that only people should vote with those who have property. But right now, another way of stopping the majority rule was a lot of white men without property couldn't vote. Black, women, indentured servants, Indians, and free slaves had no access to the ballot. Therefore, where is representation by the majority? There is none. Then you couldn't vote for president directly, same as today. This is left up to the Electoral College, who rubber stamps or approves Republican or Democratic parties. Now, over the years, I called for a popular election of president. But now, based on what I just said just now, that we are miseducated and we're not politically astute, then I don't think we should vote for the president directly. And for years, I vote independent. I'm rethinking that, thinking that we are voting for the president directly, but we're not. So let's say I got an independent candidate. And the independent candidate should defeat Republican and the Democratic candidate, like Perot. Perot was leading the Republican and Democratic candidate. I think it was Bush and Clinton, I believe. Perot was ahead. And so although Republicans and Democrats fight against one another, once they saw a lead that Perot was getting, they stopped fighting one another and started attacking Perot. I think they said something about his daughter or something like that. And once they got him out of the way, then they went back to fighting again. But suppose Perot was successful and winning the votes, the popular votes, and going to Electoral College. But since the people don't vote for the president directly, what's the possibility? It's a question for discussion. What's the possibility of they stealing it from him in the Electoral College? Because the Electoral College is a rubber stamp of the Republican and Democratic Party. I mean, how would that work? How many people that's in Electoral College are in a minority party? In democracy, the people would be political astute. Then they could make the key decisions about their government. We don't have that here. In a democracy, the people will be allowed to march on Washington. And when they get there, someone will be there to address their concerns. That doesn't happen here. People from other countries say, this is a great nation. You can march on Washington. They don't take notice that there never is a government official to address our concerns. Instead, they say, are y'all relieved? Just get off your chest. Good, we'll see you next time. Democracy is about equal distribution. I bought a whole Tuesday to Power to Work. A co-worker asked for a slice. I told her she couldn't have a slice of my pie because she has 2 children. She responded, what does that have to do with it? I answered, you have 2 mouths to feed. Therefore, you should get 3/4 slices of pie, and I get 1/4. But this country, they see nothing wrong with men making more money than the entire country. Elon Musk's net worth is $215 billion, more money than some countries. And that is the reason why they didn't want democracy, because it's a democracy in which the majority rule, and they were minority, they would be overthrown and not be able to live their lavish lifestyle that they did now. I can't go further, but right now, let's open the floor for some comments, Marvin.
Thank you, brother. Great topic. Great subject.
I didn't hear you for the while. I thought I was just talking.
No, I'm here. I had to click over. So thank you for that. I appreciate you really giving us perspective, right, on that. And, Slido was wide open. Actually, I was over there reading some of the comments over there. So we'll start with Slido. Sir?
Go ahead, sir.
What did you say?
Go ahead.
Okay.
I was trying to get to Slido. I was trying to get to Is it www.slido.com or how is it?
Slido.com. S-L-I-D-O.com.
All right, it didn't work for me. All right, go ahead.
So we'll start with the first one. What has to be done for black people needs to be done by black people. Do you agree? What has to be done for black people?
Do I agree? That means they gave me a proposal. They didn't give me a proposal. They asked me a question. Say it again.
Has to be done for black people need to be done by black people. Agree? And the for is capitalized and the by is capitalized. What has to be done for black people needs to be done by black people.
I think when people say, when I say I'm African-centered, one would think that I'm African-centered, and most people African-centered, that we're independent of other people's ideals. No. The framers of this Constitution, right, they collected ideas from all over the world, but they always named the Europeans, Greeks, and Rome. They never mentioned Egypt, right? So, just like I started a program about Japan, I've gone to some Indian nations, right? If you're African-centered, you're saying Africa is the center where you start from, right? But you're not going to dismiss other cultural norms that might be beneficial for the Western humanity. That's different from the Western point of view, that when somebody comes in from another country that has a cultural norm different from theirs, they will shun that person. They will try to act like it don't exist. So if someone comes in from other cultures, I could be African-centered, but respect that you bring something to the table that's very important. Because I was in a public speaker organization. This lady came from another country. I said, won't you start your speech with the cultural norms in the country that you came from? You may have a valuable thing that y'all do in terms of relationships, that y'all do in terms of economics, that y'all do in terms of politics that we can use. So when I wouldn't say it's only for us, right, I said that you start with us as the center, and you listen to all people talking, and you can borrow from other groups of people as well. Yeah.
We live in a worldwide web
of interrelationships and interdependencies. No man or mind is an island. You're not here alone.
That's true. I agree. Let me bring Brother George in, because this next question is for him. Brother George, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
All right. It says, Brother George, Nia is purpose. When thinking about purpose, what can we do to create purpose in my church for community engagement?
Well, based on the definition, it talks about things that you want to accomplish with your life through discipline. And so you kind of have to ask your church members what it is that they would like to accomplish. For example, when a church group gets together and says, you know, the membership says, we want to get a new church, then you go on a venture to raise funds, to get contributions, to focus in on getting a new church. Well, you can do the same thing with changing the principles and the behaviors of the membership by establishing how can we become better as human beings. And you can have a focus group to accomplish that. And I don't think it'd be very hard because you got a book to follow that straight up tells you right from wrong and gives you examples of human beings who lived in the past that things for human beings who were needy. So I think that all the material is there for you to use. It's just a matter of putting it to use. So I hope that answers the person's question, Brother Mark.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I'm going to slide this one over to you. Yes, sir.
Yes. I think that when you leave your church, like Malcolm said, put your religion on a shelf. he didn't mean to announce it, right? When you go into a world community, remember, everybody's not the same religion as you. So I would say spirituality is the umbrella, and I just find spirituality is to understand that everything in the universe is a manifestation of the divine force in the universe. Therefore, everything interrelated, interdependent. Everything is connected. Everything is a whole. But what's spiritual is not so much that everything is a whole. What's spiritual is your relationship to the whole. So your religion is supposed to teach you about your spiritual union. So when you leave your church, you got to realize that everybody is not Christian. Everybody's not Muslim. Everybody's not Jew. Everybody's not black. Everybody's not white. So understand your religion is not the umbrella. Spirituality is the umbrella. And your religion is supposed to get you there.
Well,
all right, brothers,
you,
this is wide open. I want you back for a second, Brother George. Kevin, now you take this one first because you just had that other one. The next question is, how do we truly address God as being white? That's for both of y'all. What y'all got? How do we truly address God being white?
Which one first, me or George?
You can take this one first. Brother George can follow up.
Well, first of all, there's a creative force out here that even atheists know that the force out here beyond your comprehension. And what happens is, what your parents did is that it's a force out here beyond our comprehension. I see God, I see birth, but I don't know why a child birth. I see you, but I don't know why you. I see me, but I don't know why me. I don't know why the stars don't fall out of the sky. I don't know why the sun don't fall and hit the earth, right? So I said, that's a force out here beyond my comprehension. I got that. But what Europeans have done is took the argument of all causes, that was incomprehensible, and they had to have the answer. So they colonized. That's the worst colonization you could do, to colonize that which is the argument of all causes, put a nose on it, put a face on it, make it white, make it blonde, all that stuff, you know. And that's what they have done, right? Right? And we understand everything is connected. And what they have done is, you know for yourself, they have not seen that creative force. No one has. So Even to ask that person a question, you shouldn't even put one with blackface. Because if you saw that force, for example, let's say Jesus. There is no picture of Jesus alive, you know what I mean? So you might say he may have this type of complexion. His hair might be in a certain way. But you don't have distinct features to be able to draw him. Like I can draw Marvin, I can draw George, I can draw Bruce. You don't have distinct features to be able to draw him. So it shouldn't be done.
Great point. Brother George.
Yes, sir. Sir Marimba Ani, some know her as Donna Richards in the past. She wrote a book thinking about that subject very intensely. And the book is Yoruku. And she talked about, you know, to get to the point, she talked about the Europeans' desire for world domination. And so one of the ways that that was to be accomplished was through the Council of Nicaea, where they determined that they were going to cast God and all of the saints in the Bible in their image. And so they got a lot of recourse from the African religious leaders that were at that conference. And so they did some tricky things, but the major reason was world domination. That when you look at people's highest ideal of life, it's who they believe is God, who they believe what their God is and what their God looks like. And so if you make God white and you make the world accept it, then you're going to be in a very powerful position. It's just like I got this from Dr. Leonard Jeffrey, and he gave a definition of power. And he said that power is the ability to define what reality is and have others accept that definition as though it was their own. And as far as the white image of God, they have been very successful with that. Even though the book says something completely different than what they say and what they use as an image, they have been very successful with that. And so for the most part, brother, it deals with world domination. And so if we're going to change the image, we simply go to the book and we change it. Go ahead, brother.
All right.
Yeah. Also, in their Ten Commandments, for those who are Christians, right, it says, have no image of the divine. They'll kill that. Mm-hmm. Whether it's white or whatever color, they'll kill that. No divine. And what happens is those of power, right, found some justification for doing that. But it said, add no image of the divine. So they'll kill that. Whether remove the white image from our mind, move images, period, right? You had to worry about it. Just move images, period. Because you have no right to put an image that nobody has never seen.
That's a great point. You're listening live to African American Empowerment Saturday, 845-277-9250. Slido is in effect today. It's pretty good. 365-0103 at slido.com. Or you can call into the live call-in line, 845-277-9250. Let's go to the lines. We've got Brother Lush. Brother Lush, welcome to the show. How are you today, sir?
Thank you for picking my call, and good day to everyone. My question for you, Brother Akibolan, is this. Look, in the United States, we have somewhere in the neighborhood of like 500-some-odd electoral votes. I could specifically talk about where I am here in Alabama that has 9. Based on your conversation and your presentation, how do you think that we as citizens need to be accountable for voting? What is it that you think that we need to do? We're always talking about holding somebody else accountable, but what is it that we need to be doing to hold our own selves accountable, especially when we're talking about voting?
One thing, Brother Lush, we could push for greater representation in Washington, D.C., since you got all black folks down there. My understanding, I don't think they vote for. I think they might get some. They don't get the same full representation that we get. So that's a vote we should have right there. And my whole thing is that the way the Constitution is written, you're supposed to have, you got state rights, and the government, the federal government, national government is supposed to get smaller, smaller, smaller. So we focus so much on voting for federal officials, voting for the president of the United States, right? And we don't vote in local elections, right where you are, because we don't have to dance to the same tune another state dance to. That's why you got one state where you might have a death penalty, another state you don't. One state have marriage by two people of the same sex, another state that you don't, right? So maybe we stop putting so much emphasis on voting in these national elections, where all they're important, and get people to vote locally where it counts the most where they are, and then that can manifest itself into the broader arena. Just like where I live at, right? Because you, when somebody runs for president, only person you know where that person is the state they came from. Like in my state, we had McCain. Tim Kaine, we got Mark Warren. So one of them was running for president. Virginia can speak on their character because we know them. No one else probably can unless they went through different states, right? But I would say in order to get people to vote, have dressed, do like the Black Panther Party did. Go door to door, right, and find what do you want? You know, instead, you pose your will on people. Who are the people's concerns? And when you find what the people's concerns, right, then extract the points of them voting locally to address those concerns. Because what's done nationally is taking care of concerns that the people don't have no control of in their daily life, like treaties with other nations and war and things like that. But where you live at, you got control over them. But my answer to you is appeal to them where they are right now and how voting locally would enhance their lives, and not put so much emphasis on the national election, the federal for President of the United States.
Thank you, Brother Kivalon. Thank you for entertaining my question.
And thank you for asking the question related to the subject matter, politics.
All right. Stay on, Brother Les, because I might need you on this one. The Constitution does not include African Americans, and nothing about it pertains to us. We need our own Constitution. Again, Slido, the Constitution does not include African Americans, and nothing about it pertains to us. We need our own Constitution. What do you brothers think about that?
You're the
lead, so we'll take you, and then we'll go to Brother Lloyd.
I'll go first, right? Let's say we establish the Constitution for us, right? Who would put it together? See, that's the question. Who will put it together? The people that you probably come out, you probably name, is people that probably ain't that crazy about. You know what I mean? Who would put this new Constitution together? Who in Washington, D.C. right now thinks like those who come on this program? Probably none. So what we have to do is get somebody who can put it in the middle ground. Meet me halfway. Let's say Maxine Walkie. The sister in Georgia, right? Somebody like that, right? You got to first decide who gonna put this Constitution together, because if the person in the right mind don't put it together, what you're gonna have is a black face putting together something that's another white agenda. Which I mentioned earlier, which is the speech I gave earlier, is that a lot of things we think is in the Constitution is not there. I argue that we probably need 13th Amendment, because when you read it literally, there was no slavery in the Constitution. There's no blacks. There's no color. There's no African Americans. None of that's in the Constitution. They use code words. So when the Confederates came with their Constitution, they replaced those code words and put Negro, color, black in there. So the point is, I agree to a certain degree. Yes, we do. But who will put this together? If I ask you to name 10 people you think can put it together, most likely those 10 people name be somebody I won't agree with. You probably said, what's the guy named Al Sharpton or Roland Mars or something like that. So if you find somebody with like minds that can put it together, yes, but I can't think of nobody who would do that.
All right. Brother George. Brother Kevin.
Could you restate the question, because I want to make sure I heard it right.
Yes, sir. The Constitution does not include African Americans, and nothing about it pertains to us. We need our own Constitution.
Okay. That right there is saying that we're going to have our own nation. You know, so we would need our own nation. You know, so that's a whole nother question. I will answer that question by saying this. I do think that the Constitution needs to be redone, period, for everybody in this country, because it's so gray that it's hard to really establish or determine what is constitutional and what is not, you know. And they have these, you know, constitutional law as a profession and all of that. And I do believe that the Constitution needs to be redone. It needs to be rewritten and made clearer so that it can be properly exercised, you know. But as far as us having our own constitution, that would mean that you have your own country, because they're not going to agree to the constitution that we have the same way we don't agree with theirs, because it's biased. So that's my answer, brother. I don't want to take up a bunch of time.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Brother George. Brother Lush, what you got? What you think?
That's a tough question. And you know, because to tell you the truth, my mind went, first of all, huge, right, with regards to there's like, what, 8-9 billion people, billion people in the world? And then to dwindle it all the way down, then you start looking at the number of black people in the United States, right, and which we make up somewhere in the neighborhood of 14%. That's a tough question. Then there's some basic definitions that need to be had. Like, what is the Constitution, number one? What is it going to cover? What is it going to produce for us to produce, say, constructive results? So it's kind of tough. That was a tough question there. And particularly where I am, I mean, we're still operating under a constitution that had been established in 1901. Hello. So I'm going to mute myself on that question there.
Hey, Bob, let me try it again.
Sorry.
Bob.
Yes, sir.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. What's your question?
Can you hear me? No, I was commenting on that, right? My thing is the Constitution no longer serves its usefulness. It was written, it's a good document written for them, and no longer serves its usefulness, because if it serves its usefulness, then the amendment calls for ratification by 3/4 states. Why is it in 235 years it only had 27 amendments? They're not amending, they're interpreting. So I go with George said, right? Instead of throwing the baby out with the bathwater, work on the one that's already here, because in order to have a whole new one for us, right? Like George said, you can't be over here. you gotta get your old ass. So my thing is, I think that it's no longer serving their usefulness, because it was written for white people, for white people, by white people, but they didn't put that in there. They put code words in there, and since they didn't put the words in there, black, negro, color, what, you know what I mean? Certain things. It's no longer serving their usefulness, so they're going around circles, right, trying to make ends meet, because the Constitution, contrary to popular belief, has not changed. It's the same Constitution. You got amendments, but the Constitution has not changed. And so, since it's not changed, it's kind of messing them up, because they want to take that part out where it says that when I pass something, it has to be ratified by 3/4 states. The states might not want to ratify No Life Law. The state might not want to ratify you tapping their phone. The state might not want to ratify you reading their emails. So instead of them having amendments, they are interpreting. So I think they are, it's sticking them in the back. I think it's no longer serving their usefulness. They're trying to find some ways, they're circumventing around it. So it's not really the Constitution sticking. What's sticking you is that they're not following it.
Thank you, brothers. Let's go back to the lines. 210-3519. Last four. 3519. You're live. Do you have a question, a comment, a statement for Kevin and myself? 3519, are you there? All right, let's slide on back over to Slido. We've got just a few minutes left. Next question is, democracy is a cloak for imperialism and colonization. What do you think about that, Kevin? Huh? Is it just a catchphrase?
Well, we don't have democracy, first of all. So I hear what you're saying, what the person's saying, but we don't have democracy. It stands for public for which it stands.
Right.
What they call representative democracy. So, but what they have.
All right,
is,
we got
like
some more Slidos popping in.
Populist. Yeah, I agree.
All right, I got three Slidos. I'm going to just say them real quick. Christ was a real man that lived. He can be drawn, but the Almighty cannot. If you're a black voter in a predominantly white state, it's better to focus on your local elections. And Al Sharpton is an FBI informant. Okay. Democracy is about who plugged into who. It networks and collaborations and connections within a system of the rich. One more Slido. Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Liberty and justice for all, question mark, for all. All right.
Was that person reading the Constitution, or was they read the Declaration of Independence?
I don't know, but it says Republic for which it stands. All right, we're almost out of here. Y'all still believing in this Biden madness? Okay, somebody's on Biden today. We need good, honest, and trustworthy leaders in our black community. Someone who cannot be bought or sold. All right, I'm going to wrap it up on that. That's Slido. There's a lot out there today. All right, Brother Kevin, let me get final thoughts from you. Thank you, Brother Lush, for joining us. Brother George, final comments, brother, as we wrap up for today.
I just say I appreciate the feedback. That's it. I appreciate the questions and the comments.
Great show, man. Democracy. Constitution opposed to a democracy. We got a lot of fresh perspective. Brother George, final comments.
It was a great show, brother. I learned. You know, I always learn a lot when Brother Kevin Lyon lectures. So I appreciate him doing that. Thank you.
True. Great show, Brother Kevin Lyon. Brother Lush, you still out there? What you got for me, brother?
I'm just ready for next weekend, and it's always a pleasure to be in class.
All right, I held you out there today so that people could get used to hearing you, because your show is up next week. Join us next week for Brother Lush's. He promotes. Can you tell us a little bit about your show before we wrap up?
Just basically, this is Women's History Month, right? And so it's imperative that we raise the sisters and let them know that they are appreciated and they are wanted. It has been said that you judge a country by the way you treat your women. And so we want to ensure that they are acknowledged and brought forward.
Thank you. That's next Saturday for the Lush Women's History Month, week, and everything else in between. So we got to look out for our sisters. So sisters, tell a friend, join us next week. Brother Lush has a presentation. But thank you all for listening. It's African American Empowerment Saturday. Flood your young people with knowledge and information. But go out and vote in your local elections. Try to do better. Become better example for our children and our community. Model behavior. And whatever you do, continue to become the best person that you can be today and every day. It's important that we find a purpose, plug into that purpose, and then resist the challenge of commercialism and being a consumer. Stand on your own two feet, become the best person that you could be today and every day. Again, it's African American Empowerment Saturday, 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. Marvin Rome, I'm out.
And the world will be better for this. That one man scorned and covered with tar, still strove with his last ounce of courage.